I'm Kara Miller. This is Boston Public Radio. A new poll out of Harvard's Kennedy School finds that global issues are a key factor in how people will vote. And last night's presidential debate has likely given voters more to chew on when they head to the polls. The role that this race has had on the global stage is also a topic that we're exploring as part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days election coverage. And here with me in Studio 3 to talk about how the world perceives the U.S. are Aaron Schachter from the international news program The World, which is based here at WGBH, and Nasser Wedadi, Director of Civil Rights Outreach for the American Islamic Congress. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Hi, Kara.
Thank you for having us.
So let's dive right in here to something that is pretty controversial and was last night. Bob Schieffer from CBS asked Mitt Romney and Barack Obama about Israel. Let's listen to Governor Romney responding to Schieffer's question about Israel.
I want to underscore the same point the president made, which is that if I'm president of the United States, when I'm president of the United States, we will stand with Israel. And if Israel is attacked, we have their back, not just diplomatically, not just culturally, but militarily.
Aaron Schachter, let me ask you here. Certainly, Romney criticized President Obama for not being close enough to Israel. And I wonder, when the Middle East, when Israel looks at this, how do they view how America has related to Israel in the past 4 years?
Well, Obama is definitely seen, for whatever reason, as less friendly to Israel. And so this is a point that that Romney is using to bash the president. And frankly, I don't entirely understand where this comes from. Nasser, it seems like the policy is continuing from more or less from the Bush years.
I will chime in here, not as my capacity as the Muslim Outreach Director of the American Islamic Congress, but just the private citizen who is a fluent Hebrew speaker. Just from tracking the Hebrew press and Israeli opinion views, the problem stems from the initial drive of the Obama administration to settle the issue of settlements and the perceived slight towards the Israeli prime minister by the president, when at one point the U.S. administration was asking for an imposition of a freeze on the settlements.
So Obama came into office basically demanding that Israel stop building settlements, that they not expand the current ones, that they not build any new ones. And it was a harsher stance than had been taken before.
Yes. I mean, in historical perspective, this was a completely different new tone coming out of Washington from the perspective of some Israelis, because the last time that the United States or a United States president took that kind of rhetoric or positioning towards Israel was President George W. Herbert Bush, the father. I mean, the famous incident with Jim Baker, the former Secretary of State, writing the White House dispatch number and a pad and pointing it to the camera, saying that if then Prime Minister Shamir is interested in talking, here's the number, he can call us.
So is your sense that in Israel there's a perception that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, there's a real break between him and President Obama, just sort of ideologically?
Yes, but however, within Israel, there is a twist to that side of the story, because Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, or Bibi as his people call him in media, is perceived as a part of his brand in Israeli politics is that he is the America guy. And that was one of the things that he got elected on, that he will basically see shepherd through U.S.-Israeli relations. Actually, there is a growing concern in Israel about Netanyahu's handling of the relationship with the United States. And at least in left-leaning media such as Haaretz, columnists like Aluf Ben, to name one amongst many, there have been a plethora of pieces written precisely raising concern about Netanyahu potentially spoiling a vital relationship for the state of Israel, because everyone understands that the United States has and continues to provide Israel with unprecedented diplomatic and military support.
There's a feeling that Netanyahu needs to be tough, but he can't push too far. And so I think there is a feeling now in Israel that he has pushed too far.
Yes. Aaron Schachter, let's broaden this out and look at the Middle East more generally. And it's interesting because when the president came in, he said, well, we've got two wars going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I'm going to pull back. And it ended up, because of the Arab Spring and all sorts of things, that we have been really very heavily involved in the Middle East. So I wonder when is your sense in the Arab world that when people look at our involvement in Libya, maybe our sort of peripheral or non-involvement in Syria, they think that America is doing what it should be doing, that it's involved to the right level?
I think they absolutely don't think that America is doing what it should be doing. Libya was a nice episode, I think, from people there. They do look at America and say, thanks for helping, but there's still involvement in places. They're not, by many estimates, doing right by the Israeli-Palestinian situation. And if you look at the debate last night, there was not a single the word Palestine, Palestinian, was not mentioned at all in all the talk about Israel.
And so
There still is a lot of disagreement with American foreign policy, especially with regards to the Middle East.
So, you know, when you say there is maybe some goodwill about what happened with Libya, is that goodwill simply within Libya, or did people more generally in the Arab world feel like, yes, getting involved in Libya was the right thing to do?
The impression I have is that people do think getting involved in Libya was the right thing to do, but then they stand back and say, well, wait a minute, if you got involved in Libya, you helped there. Why not help in Syria? You don't seem to be doing anything in Syria. We're still not doing very well in Afghanistan. Iraq is still a bit of a mess. There are a lot of places that people in the Middle East can point to and say, well, we're not doing such a great job, and Obama, you're not doing what you said you would do.
Nasser Wedidi, do you get the sense that people in the Arab world would like America to help either monetarily or troops on the ground or whatever it is in Syria?
I might surprise you here and surprise the listeners by pointing out that the relationship between the United States and the Arabs through the last 50 years has become as intertwined, minus the colonial baggage, as the one that existed or exists arguably today between Algeria and France. There's a lot of cultural exchange going on. There's a lot of influence going on both sides of that relationship in the ocean that neither side seems to be willing or knows how to articulate positively. In terms of our work, we were the first American NGO to hit the ground in Tunisia. We have something called the Tune in Tunisia program, where we take young entrepreneurs and train them on strategic planning. They very much like that side of America, which is the entrepreneurial, the dynamic, the young. They also, at these very same youth, have conflicting views on the foreign policy, which is generally what I think that a nuance in the debate that could be hit is realizing that the relationship between America and the Arabs of the Middle East is a far more complicated business that can be reduced simply to Israel-Palestine or the Iraq war or the Afghanistan war. And there's a lot that could be said to the fact that either sides of the relationship has been influencing the other in ways that have not yet been publicly or at least extensively identified. America and the Middle Eastern Arabs have a lot more in common and have a lot more shared interests than either side seems to care to want to admit.
Interesting.
It is also nuanced. I wanted to say, my mother-in-law actually asked me, you know, Egypt is done with Mubarak. We helped somewhat in that process. Why do they still hate us? And sure, that did happen. But for 30 years prior to that, America was propping up Mubarak with billions of dollars a year and tens of billions of dollars during the course of his reign. And our memories are short. Their memories are not as short. They remember that this is what happened, you know? So it's not going to change overnight.
We're talking with Aaron Schachter from The World and Nasser Wedadi, the Director of Civil Rights Outreach for the American Islamic Congress. And Nasser Wedadi, let me follow up on one thing that we talked about, which is the issue of, as the Arab Spring has swept through all these countries, which Aaron touched on, how do Arab countries want, if at all, the U.S. to be involved? You know, we saw the Muslim Brotherhood obviously has ascended in Egypt. Do they just sort of want America hands off? Do they still want money coming in? Do they want any sort of sense of, here's what we think of your politics?
Look, in the past 7 years, we've been running something called the Dream Deferred Essay Contest, which basically asking young Middle Easterners from Iran to Mauritania to tell us about their civil rights dream. One of the most interesting stories was about a Syrian poetess who was talking basically about a demonstration that was bemoaning America and bashing America for then the Iraq War. And then at the end of it, the story ended. And then my boyfriend and I agreed to meet in front of the U.S. consulate for our visa appointment. So it's very schizophrenic. This is a very complicated emotional relationship where Arabs and Americans, one might add, are not sure what either side wants. At times they want them they want them hands on. At times they don't want to see them. It's a dysfunctional marriage, and like all marriages. We have to sit down and talk and compromise.
Aaron Schachter, a couple of media questions for you. One is, what is the coverage of this presidential race like in Europe? I wonder this particularly against the backdrop of, against the backdrop of serious financial issues that obviously people are working through in Europe. How do they view the Obama versus Romney policy?
I actually would allow me to jump in. Actually, yeah, I've been tracking. I'm Mauritanian by birth, therefore I am a Francophone, not by my choice. And I've been tracking very extensively French media. And it's very interesting is that one of the most popular shows on French TV is Les Guignols, which is a Muppet show that basically is a reference in French media. And I was surprised to see that the portrayal of Governor Romney. It's very much a carbon copy of the portrayal in the past of President George W. Bush. And I was completely, for me, that was bizarre because these are completely different personalities, meaning they were portrayed as this inept, militaristic, and not very bright characters. And that reflects a certain view the French, and by extension, to a certain extent, the Europeans have of U.S. politics and U.S. debates. What I think that is missing in the shuffle is that when they put on that prism and look at us here at the United States, they view us through their own problems. That is a postmodern, imperfect union that is going through a major financial breakdown and soaring unemployment and somewhat of an ingrained, not only cynicism, but the opposite of the natural American optimism. We here in the United States believe that we're the shining beacon on the hill, and we do believe that we will turn the worst situation around and go forward. That is an antithesis in Europe because of the different sum of histories and politics. They cannot quite wrap their minds around America being able to redefine itself so quickly.
And well, we don't dictate, right? We bring freedom and democracy to the world.
Europe in a generation.
Aaron Schachter, a last word here on China. And uh-oh. I wonder what you see in terms of coverage, but we really devote a lot of attention to them in our debates in generally a negative way. How do you think that is playing in China?
Well, I was talking about this with Ambassador Nicholas Burns the other day, and he said that China just doesn't understand why they are being treated this way. They do a lot of business here. we have a lot of cultural exchanges, a lot of students here. They don't get why they're being bashed. But he says it's something we need to do. We need to bring to light the human rights problems they have, the economic problems that they have. And so it's a worthwhile, it is actually, believe it or not, according to Nicholas Burns, a worthwhile thing to be doing in our public debate. But China's just befuddled. They don't get it.
And do you think they have any sense in between Governor Romney and President Obama who would be better at dealing with them politically, who they would rather see in office?
It seems that they've built decent relationships so far with Obama. One of the things I did ask Ambassador Burns was, come on, they know what our election cycle is like. They know that these sorts of comments will come up as part of the process. And he said they don't really get it. It's just a mystery to them why they're being bashed like this. There's so much investment going both ways. They're confused.
Yeah, fascinating to look at it from the world looking at us. As part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days election coverage, we've been talking about how America is perceived across the globe. And I've been joined by Aaron Schachter from the international news program The World, based right here at WGBH, and Nasser Wededdy, Director of Civil Rights Outreach for the American Islamic Congress. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Kelly Crossley is back in Studio 3 to send us into the rest of the day.
Thanks, Kara. Thanks to everyone for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in tomorrow, noon to 2. I'm Kelly Crossley. Boston Public Radio is a production of WGBH.